There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Yeah, broadcasting all the way through till 6 o'clock, which is perfect for us, because that's when the first of our finals gets underway. Exeter and Sarries at 6 o'clock. After that, we've got a 6:45 racing against Castres. Now, I thought that was the final. That's not the final, is it, Mark Archer?
No, Montpellier await the winner of this match to play in the final in Paris next weekend, Tom. So it's this match has decided who will make the final. Montpellier qualified yesterday, so the winner of the racing and
Castres
match will go on and play them in that final.
6:45 kickoff for that one. In the meantime, we've got the cricket. It is, of course, first test down at Lords. There's also qualifying at the Monaco Grand Prix. Final rounds of both the Fort Worth Invitational and the BMW PGA Championship. Sorry, not final rounds, but the penultimate rounds are underway there, so we'll have updates on that one. We've got lots to look forward to as well, because football styly. Leinster against Scarlets at 9 o'clock, but before that, you've got Aston Villa against Fulham in the Championship playoff, and then the big one at 10:45 this evening, Real Madrid against Liverpool. We're all getting very excited about the Champions League final, but McCarty, myself, Arch, and others down here getting excited about the playoff final as well. And why wouldn't you? It is the game that delivers time and time again.
Make important things for ourselves and for our supporters. It's a project of the club. It's very clear. We in the future want to be up, and we want to back to Premier League.
We got to go again. All the boys in the changing room, we'll put a chat, and that's it. And we move on. We're positive.
What a terrific header from Dennis Itoi. We're on our way to Wembley, and rightly so.
Down the Fulham Road, we're burning with ambition. The first division is where we want to be. And if you've seen what a team we've got this season, you know the reason we'll get there easily. But first we're heading down the Wembley way to show the world that we can really play.
Oh, this year we're gonna win the cup. Hey, Viva El Fulham.
We're gonna do it. I think Fulham are gonna do it. Come on, Fulham.
What makes this one? I mean, every club, as we know, in the United Kingdom have a great amount of history behind them, but these two clubs have very special histories behind them.
Huge. Absolutely right, Tom. And two good teams that, if you were picking an ideal Premier League, Villa most certainly would be in it. Fulham have got the kind of recent history with Mohamed Al-Fayed, of course, buying the club back in the 90s, and then the success that they had with Kevin Keegan at the helm, and Chris Coleman, Jean Tigana coming in as well. What an unbelievable story. Now Shahid Khan, the Pakistani billionaire businessman, owns the football club. He's the one that's, of course, trying to buy Wembley. He owns the Jacksonville Jaguars over in the NFL. And you're right, two clubs with great history. I've been to Craven Cottage. It is a phenomenal little old stadium. It's one of those, it's got all the, you feel it when you go in there, you feel the history, it's steeped in all of that. And yeah, listen, for me, may the best team win. I'll be delighted to see both Aston Villa or Fulham back in the Premier League, but I really do, as I said earlier, Ryan Sessegnon, 17 years of age, into the teens. I think he scored 18 goals for Fulham. He's 17 years of age, for goodness sake. He's on the left-hand side. Their midfield three, Tom Kearney, Stefan Johansson, Kevin McDonald, two Scots in there as well. They are the best three in the league for me. The midfield, look out for that today. Fulham will get the ball down. They'll move it through the lines quickly. For Aston Villa, a little bit more attritional. You'd expect that. They're managed by Steve Bruce. You know, John Terry, the inspirational man at the back there, he'll look for one last hurrah. He'll be looking to produce another monumental performance.
Has he been inspirational this year?
He has been. I think he's played all but one game. He's 36 years of age now, and he's been fit for what is a grueling league. 46 games is the Championship. Then throw in a couple of away legs, home and away leg in the playoff, and then the final. So it will be 40 49 in total for them to get back in the Premier League, and he's played all but one of them.
And Aston Villa is a big club. They're
huge.
Arguably the biggest club in the Midlands. They've got a big ground. They've won former First Division titles, European success as well. Interesting to read during the week that John Terry, obviously I think he's got another option on for next year on his contract, says, well, if I play in the Premier League but I don't want to play against Chelsea, you have to stand me down. I was like, how's that going to work?
It won't. I'm reading that Aston Villa, and why would they? Why would they pay a player that can't play against Chelsea? No, you lead out that team. He's captain of Aston Villa, and I'm sure he will. If they do go up, I think a lot's been made of his relationship and his special connection to Chelsea Football Club, but I think there's still plenty left in the tank that if Aston Villa go up, and I think it comes down to that, Arch. If Villa do not go up and they lose today, I don't think John Terry's at that football club next season. So a lot riding on it. And similarly to Fulham, if Fulham don't go up, Jokanovic has done an unbelievable job, the former Chelsea midfielder. He has got clubs looking at him. Sessegnon is a superstar in the making. He really is. A lot of clubs looking at him. So a lot riding on this for both teams. If Fulham go up, I think they'll retain their best talent and they'll go again. The same with Aston Villa. They'll retain it and go again. If they don't, it's a third season in the Championship for them. Parachute payments start to dwindle. The money that's coming into the coffers starts to reduce. And then Aston Villa are having to cut their cloth accordingly.
Do we know if Prince William will be in attendance
or not?
It's a
good question, that. I don't know. I would imagine he will.
I thought we should ask you that question, Tom.
But isn't it... It's a difficult one for him, I suppose. He could be there as the head of the FA, couldn't he? Because he's the patron of the Football Association. So, in theory, he should be there to hand over a trophy. But will he be wearing...
the Aston Villa scarf.
Scarlet and blue, or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. I didn't actually think of that. I'm sure he will be
there. I thought he read somewhere he was attending on a personal basis as a fan. Right. Not with official FA cap on. So that's what I read, but you're much closer to these sources than us,
Tom.
Think
he's in the away end with the fans. A baseball cap on and just sitting there.
Villa take on Fulham. It's kicking off at 8 o'clock is the playoff final. Let's just remind ourselves some of the highlights of Villa's road to Wembley.
Hello, I'm Rachel Stringer, and let's have a look at Villa's road to Wembley. The final game of the 2017-18 season is upon us, and it couldn't be more important with the prospect of promotion back to the Premier League on the cards. 90 minutes separates Villa and a return to the top flight of English football. It's been a season of real progress for the boys in claret and blue, but it's now time to take that next vital step. Let's have a look at Villa's road to Wembley. New season, new faces. Steve Bruce brings 14 new players and a new captain in the form of John Terry in an effort to get Villa promoted. Experience is definitely the watchword as he drafts in Robert Snodgrass, Ahmed El Mohammadi and Glenn Whelan. It would take until their fourth game of the season to put 3 points on the league table. But what a performance. It was a 4-2 win at home to Norwich City. Conor Hourihan scoring a hat-trick and Andre Green getting his first senior goal in front of the Holt End.
Andre Green, and it's a beauty.
After a spell of three consecutive draws, Villa started to hit the right notes and won four out of their next five games, including at home to Fulham, where John Terry scored his first goal for the club.
A decent one, and it's John Terry!
Taking 37 points from a possible 63 in the preceding games, Villa showed there was no festive hangover as they headed into the New Year's Day clash against Bristol City.
For Hogan! A wonderful header for his first league goal of the season.
Jack Grealish proving his worth big time with his man of the match performance in the 5-0 thrashing of promotion-chasing Robins.
And Snodgrass, Bjarnason, Hourihan! Five!
After winning four on the bounce, Villa hosted the Blues in the second City derby. After a tight first half, it took for in-form Albert Adoma to break the deadlock on 60 minutes and a stunning volley from Conor Hourihan to secure the win and put Villa up to second in the league and the Claret and Blue faithful into dreamland. New year, new resolution. Brucey signs new players in the January transfer window to add depth to his squad, including hitman Lewis Graben. We were determined to get back on track. After a solid away point at Preston, it was Sheffield Wednesday who felt the full force of Bruce's men. 4-2 was that scoreline.
And he gets the goal.
There was a stutter with defeats to QPR and Norwich and a draw away at Hull, but Bruce got his men firing again with the finish line in sight. Super Jack scored a stunner in the 1-0 victory over Cardiff, which led to wins over Leeds and Ipswich, which ensured our playoff spot.
Sensational!
Everything was coming together, and it was a wolf in the park as Villa took on top of the table Wolverhampton Wanderers at home. A masterclass from start to finish ensured a 4-1 victory to keep promotion chances very much alive. What followed was a huge two-legged tussle against Middlesbrough. Everything was on the line. It was that man, Mile Jedinak, with the one goal across the two legs, which ensured we reached the playoff final here at Wembley.
Look at what it means to them. They will be going to Wembley.
We've witnessed it all. 46 regular season games, two huge playoff legs, and experienced every emotion. But now we're here, the home of English football, for a winner-takes-all clash against Fulham. Come on, Villa boys, it's time to roar.
Will the Villa boys roar? It remains to be seen. They've certainly got a man there at the helm, haven't they, who knows how to do it. He's taken teams up from the Championship before, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He's done a good job, Steve Bruce. He steadied the ship there. It was a club that was... Well, it was only heading in one direction, Aston Villa. A couple of questionable managerial appointments. Remy Gard, of course, came in and that didn't work out. And Aston Villa plummeted. And they've finally kind of, I guess they've got, they're a robust team, right? What they are is he's bought experience. Robert Snodgrass, Mile Jedinak in there, John Terry he's brought in. They've spent a lot of money as well. Look at like Sir Scott Hogan, who he brought in from Brentford for a lot of money. So I would say the pressure... The expectation is more on Aston Villa to get the result tonight and kick on, because literally, as I said earlier, lives change at that football club. If they don't go back to the Premier League, there will be a cost-cutting exercise. I've no doubt about that. And for Fulham, it's my kind of heart's with them tonight. I really hope, just because I think the way they play their football, Tom, will see them make a real splash in the Premier League next season, and I think they'll surprise one or two.
Mark Archer, our colleague, is getting a bit of stick on the Twitter system at the moment. In fact, you've got the messages coming in front of you there, Chris McCarty. Can you just read that one out for Archer at the top, please?
An individual, I'm not quite sure the fact.
I know who it is.
Mike pointing out that Villa are not the biggest club in the Midlands.
Well, obviously you've got West Bromwich Albion then, or Wolves.
Well, no, listen, I think they
are. And you may be at Birmingham City down there in fourth or fifth position in the Midlands, at least.
Well, no.
Derby County, Nottingham Forest.
Nottingham Forest.
Put them in there. So, yeah, then you've got Birmingham.
Leicester
so, Birmingham.
City.
Coventry.
Coventry.
You've got a lot of good clubs in the Midlands.
Yeah. Stevenage.
I'm kind of with you, though. I think Aston Villa probably are the biggest.
Who is that texting in?
Good friend of mine who's a Birmingham City fan.
Oh,
so
right.
I thought Birmingham, didn't they just stay up in the Championship this year? They avoided to go down to the First Division. So
Gary Monk just about kept them in the Championship. And, again, a similar club, spent a lot of money in the summer. Jota came in from Brentford, I think it was, and they need a big season next season. There's so many big clubs in the Championship.
That's the thing, isn't it? So to come out of
Sheffield
it.
Sheffield Wednesday, Forest.
Yeah, to come out
Leeds.
Of it.
Leeds United.
It's incredible.
Is what we've been making a lot of this game, but there it is, isn't it? There are so many good clubs in there, big clubs in there.
There's no guarantee. Exactly. And you have a season, if as good as it's been for both these teams, I guess the beauty of the Championship is that there's no guarantee that those two teams will be good again next season. So when the chance comes along, the opportunity comes knocking, like it is for these two teams in this Championship playoff, and I'm sure that will be the message. Obviously looking to lift the pressure off the players, but it'll be, listen, go out there. This is your chance. 90 minutes away from playing Premier League football, and that's the carrot on offer.
We know that Aston Villa have got a world-class ground. You know, obviously a lot of investment down there. It's been used for internationals in the past. We've seen international games played there. Can the same be said for Fulham, or is that another interesting aside to this one? Because you've always had an eye on the Fulham real estate, haven't you?
Yeah, no, look, I used to live just round off the Fulham Palace Road, which is walking distance. It's the amazing thing. They're a bit of a fairy tale story, Fulham, that they're stuck in a very residential part of southwest London, and on one side of the ground is the Thames, so you can't build or redevelop the ground back into that, and then you've got a lot of houses literally surrounding the ground in a park on one side, so they literally can't redevelop the ground. I think the capacity must be somewhere between 15 and 20,000.
A little bit more, 25 to 30, I think.
But that's the capacity. It'd be interesting to know what that is. And they're very restricted due to sort of compliance with the local sort of community standards and that about what they can do on the facility, on the ground. So that they're always going to be handicapped about match day revenues and selling tickets and corporate hospitality, etc. But the interesting story recently is the owner, Shadib Khan, who's still in the, apparently to reports yesterday, still in negotiations to buy Wembley. I speculated on, I think, Sports Tonight a couple of weeks ago that if he doesn't buy Wembley, he's going to want to have some tenant teams playing there. Now, we know he's got an NFL team that's played many games there, Jacksonville, in recent years. At some stage, they may want to relocate or do a new franchise in the NFL, so London then could become a home. But it wouldn't surprise me if that he looks also down the line to move Fulham to North London to play at Wembley as a potential, and you could make a lot of money by redeveloping that piece of residential or the ground into apartments or however you want to do that. And that would be a shame because it's such an old storied ground. They've got the cottage still in one corner there. It's a really nice old school, you know, place to go and watch football. But unfortunately, the modern era dictates that the bigger the stadium, the more revenue you have, the players you can buy, the wages you can pay.
If they make that move, do they take the Michael Jackson statue with them or not? Or does that stay?
It's been taken
down. Oh, it's gone, is it?
Yeah, thankfully.
Oh, that's gone.
It's gone, yeah.
Oh, right.
The sense prevailed and MJ statue that Muhammad Al fired. Good
I friends wonder though. What, I mean, it'd be interesting, isn't it? I mean, we all know, you know, each of us support teams, and there are faithfuls and fans and followers to that. You know, the Fulham fans are as good as any out there as well, but they're very loyal to their club, and it is a very sort of community-driven club. You know, the fan base is very local to that. Goes without saying. I'm stating the obvious, obviously, but I just wonder whether this American approach of taking a team and putting it elsewhere, almost like the franchises do over whether that would work in the football league.
Yeah, we've seen it, I guess, Wimbledon, haven't we? The boys at Wimbledon now, of course, become MK Dons, moved up to Milton Keynes, which was a travesty, an absolute travesty. I'm with you, Tom. I am a traditionalist. I'm a conservative in that regard, and that I don't like the teams that have got history and tradition. Okay, new stadiums, that's just part and parcel. You need that in order to stay relevant and stay up with the big boys. Moving locations is something I'm not for. You've said it. You've hit the nail on the head right there. Let's be frank, there's not many Fulham fans in the Midlands. There's not many football fans in the northeast of England. I can tell you there's not many Fulham fans in Scotland. Fulham are very much a club wedded to that area, or that part of London. And, I mean, I'm not a Fulham fan. You'd have to ask the Fulham fans whether they'd be willing to make the journey up to Wembley. And, again, we're speculating here. I should point out there's nothing in the way. This isn't confirmed. This is Mark Archer putting two and two together and spitting out 97, I think. But they are the ones that will have to be asked and informed of this and to ask, listen, if we do move to Wembley, would you be willing to make the journey?
And that's
there?
Interesting. I've just done the capacity check on Craven Cottage, 25,000. So to go to Wembley, which is 90,000, it just doesn't work. You have to find a whole new fan base. You're going to disenfranchise your fans, your locals, your community by moving. And it's not that far, to be honest. Craven Cottage to Wembley is probably the best part of 15, 20 kilometres. But they've got their big neighbours, Chelsea, just up the road, and that's not far away, a couple of kilometres away.
Queen's Park Rangers in the area.
Queen's Park Rangers. Brentford are redeveloping their ground, which is not a million miles away. So it is interesting, but you would hope that they can keep a sustainable team. They've always been about playing quite good football, developing youngsters. It's been their sort of model, hasn't it, at Fulham there. It'd be interesting to see whether they can hold on to young Sessegnon and a couple of their more talented players. Yeah. If they stay in that division and don't go up, or if they do move into the Premier League, do the Tottenham, I think it's four or five clubs rumoured to be after
Tottenham.
Him.
Yeah, I mean, Sessegnon, Man City, a lot of clubs have looked at him, and rightly so. I mean, left-footed, 17 years of age. He is, some of the goals he scored this season, there is a reason that Jukanovic, the boss, has put his faith in him. He is an absolute world beater in the making. I know that's an awful lot of pressure to put on a young man's shoulders, but he's dealt with everything that he's been asked to do this season, has Sessegnon, and I'm looking forward to watching him again tonight.
Right, I'm going to put you on the spot again, Chris McCarty, if that's all right. I've got a piece of paper for you, got a pen for you as well. As we know, both these clubs come with a rich heritage, but more so than Fulham, I think, in terms of former players. And the club have done a really nice little sort of montage at the moment of former players coming out and showing their support, throwing their support behind Fulham as they make their way up to Wembley Way for the game a little later on today. So, without the benefit of pictures, but just with your good old lug holes in your ears, how many of these former Fulham players can you identify?
Lads, firstly, all the best. Staff, all the best. been a fan watching in lads all this year. Makes me feel quite proud, obviously, seeing you boys develop like you have, push on like you have this year. Has been pretty special for me. Never doubted the quality in the side, never doubted you as individuals really, and always knew that it was only a matter of time. I suppose lads, along the way, especially in the profession we're in, you got hurdles that you have to jump over, and you got one more in front of you. That one comes Saturday at 5 o'clock. All I will say is, go and fly over it, lads. You deserve it. You've been by far one of the best teams. I wish you all the very best. Go and do everyone associated with the club proud. But lastly, do yourself proud, lads. Grasp the opportunity. Grasp the moment. Because it's a massive one. Big players, big teams. Take the opportunity and take the moment. I'll be watching in. All the best, lads.
Yes, boys. Berba here. I want to say a couple of things. I want to wish you good luck for the game. We all know how important that is for you. But you fully deserve to be there. You had unbelievable season, performances, goals, team spirit. So you are one win away from the Premier League. One win away. And you can win it for yourself, you can win it for the fans, and we can win it for all the people working for the club. Some of them all their life, waiting for that moment to be back into the Premier League. Good luck. Come on, Fulham.
What's up, boys? MM15 here. Just want to wish you all the best for the game at Wembley. I'll watch it on telly. My fingers are crossed for you guys. So go and get it. And if you need me for the promotion party, come on, you whites.
Hi, guys. Bobby Zamora. Just wishing you all the best in the playoff final. You play for a magnificent club. And you all deserve, after a hard season, to be playing in the Premier League. One last game. Give it your all. And I've got my fingers crossed for you. Good luck.
Hi, guys. We wish you good luck for this final. You deserve it.
Come on, Fulham. Let's go, guys.
Boys, Bulldog here. I know yous can do it. I wish yous all the best for this game. Massive game for yous. I want to see yous in a Premier League next year. You're far too good for that league. Go on, Fulham!
Hey, lads. Duffer here. Just like to wish yous all the very best in the playoff final. Get us back where we belong. And where Mark Maunders belongs, in the Premiership with the big dogs. All the best.
Hi, this is Alain Gomain, and this is
Sam
and
Leo.
Guys, we've enjoyed watching you playing this season. You play some great football, and we'll be there on Saturday to support you. Come on.
Come on, Fulham!
Hi, guys. Here, Luis Boamorti. Just want to wish you all the best for the match of the weekend. Hopefully, you guys can bring Fulham to where it belongs, to the Premier League, and make us all the supporters really proud of you guys. Thank you. Have a good one.
Just want to wish the Fulham boys the best of luck on Saturday. And it's been a fantastic season so far, but we've got one more hurdle to climb, and hopefully we can do it. And I'll be there cheering the boys on. Up to Fulham!
Hi, this is Les Strong. I'd like to congratulate Slavisa and his staff on a truly magnificent season so far. Our style of play and grit and determination to win games has been a joy to watch. Good luck to the team at Wembley, and go one better than my team in 1975 and bring the trophy and the Premiership back to the fans and the cottage. Good luck, enjoy yourself, and I know you will win.
To all the staff, TC and the boys, listen, best of luck. You've been on fire this year. Go and do the job, get it done. Enjoy the day, soak it up, and whatever it takes, just win the game, all right? Get the bonus, have a good summer. Back in the Prem. All the best, boys. Good luck.
Hey, everybody. What's up? This is Clint Dempsey. Just want to say y'all done a great job the last two seasons. I wish y'all the best in the final. I know y'all get it done. Take it easy. Peace.
Hi, boys. Tony Gow here. All I can say is, look, if I was still playing nowadays, and I wish I was, I'd love to be playing in a side like yours. Good luck with the playoff final. Go and do it for us, all of our sex players. Well done, lads, so far. It's been a joy to watch.
I want to say to the coach, brate, pokazao si na sve kako ni Balkanci radi. Mi smo fenomenalni. So sve najbolje. Mitra transledi iz leta. And to finish on the high note, and a joke. Give me the phone. I want to see something like this. Okay? And we all know strikers can do that, not defenders in midfield. Enjoy it, boy. Good luck.
Come on, guys. Let's do this. You've done amazing stuff all the way through to be there. I have no doubt you're going to make it. For the fans, for all the hard work you've done all through the hard season, I'm fully behind. And I'm sure that every fan of football will appreciate the way you played. I want you to be in the Premier League next year. So let's do this. Allez, les gars, à fond! À fond, lâchez rien jusqu'à la dernière minute. C'est trop bon après. Et vous le méritez.
Some great little memories there. All former Fulham players. Thankfully, Arch and I have got the list in front of us, so we're okay. But Chris McCarthy, on the spot here, I saw you scribbling away during that. Let's see who we can cross off the list. Who have you got?
Simon Davies.
Is not the right answer.
Dimitar Berbatov.
Correct.
Moritz Waltz.
No.
Oh, Bobby Zamora.
Yes.
Jimmy Boulard.
Yes.
Damien Duff.
Yes.
Alan Goma.
Yes.
Luis Beaumont.
Yes.
Les Strong, we heard that.
Yes.
Clint Dempsey, Tony Gale.
Tony Gale, yeah.
Sean Davis.
Is not in there.
I can't place the Londoner, the guy at the start. That's where I need a bit of helping hand. Okay. Steve Malbronk.
Is not in there.
Sylvain Legwinski.
No.
Who's the Frenchman then?
Towards the end.
I'll give you a clue. He played for your favourite club as well.
Frenchman. Fulham and... Ah, Louis Saha. Louis Saha, yes.
So the man at the top, the first
guy
one you heard.
Scott Parker.
Scotty Parker.
Ah, yes.
Scotty Parker. Then you had Dimi Berbatov. After that, in between Berbatov...
Yeah, not Moritz Waltz.
Wasn't Moritz Waltz, no. It was a player, I can't remember, but you'll know better. Michael Madell?
No.
M-A-D-L?
No.
Mike Madell, obviously massive in Fulham. Just after Bobby Zamora, you had Georgios Karagounis.
Karagounis, my goodness, I forget that he spent a spell.
Then, as he said, you had Bullard, Damien Duff, Alan Goma, Louis Beaumorty. Barry Hales was in there.
Barry Hales, yes, back in the 90s. He led the line for Keegan's team.
And then the one that we haven't Barry got Hales. In between Les Strong and Clint Dempsey was Steve Sidwell.
Steve Sidwell, another Londoner. That's what threw me. I'm writing down Sean Davis. Steve Sidwell and Scotty Parker. Good players for that team.
Some little thoughts there from former Fulham boys. Can they do it? Certainly the club believe they can. We'll find out at 8 o'clock this evening. Take a short break.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Yeah, game on indeed. It's difficult for us to focus on which game we're actually going to focus on now, because we were talking there about the Championship playoff final. That's getting underway at 8 o'clock. Before that, though, on the big screen down here at Barasti, from 6 o'clock, you'll be able to see the final game in this year's Aviva Premiership. It is Exeter against Saracens.
Without darkness, there is no light. Without preparation, there is no performance. Without support, there is no strength. And without battle, there is no victory. The Aviva Premiership Rugby Final.
Glory awaits. They love a promo, don't they? We love a promo down here on the grill as well. Two best teams through to the final game of the season.
Yeah, and Exeter, I think, finished the season on top. Saracens, packed with English internationals, suffer a little bit during the Six Nations Championship when they lose so many players off to the various Six Nations teams, and they have to sort of play a bit of catch-up. But incredibly strong, both sides are. Big name players for both, you know, Sarri's fly half, England captain Owen Farrell, Mauro Atoje, the Vinopola brothers, you name them player for player, pretty much it's a star-studded team. Taking on Exeter, who are sort of the unfashionable side that play really gritty rugby, a bit old school. what I like about Exeter, Tom, is they're the only club, I think, in the Aviva Premiership that actually turns a proper profit. They don't overspend the budget. They're a bit in the sense they have to live within their means. Tough place to go down Sandy Park in Exeter to get a result, and they use all those factors and have been incredibly consistent in the last couple of years. So, fascinating final at Twickenham today, and so many big-name players taking place for both teams.
A lot of chat being made about this sort of midfield battle that we're going to see as well. Owen Farrell with his final game. But lest we forget, Exeter finished on top of the... They won the championship last year, didn't they, Arch?
Yeah, they won a bit of an upset in the victory that they won last year, but they were deserving champions in that match, and they've been consistent. They've come back and finished the top team in the Aviva Premiership. So they've got the good draw through here to the final, and you wouldn't deny them any success. Again, the underdogs, I think, going into this final, so many big-name players, whether they be English and British Lions players. And you've got to remember, those players for Saracens, the likes of Atoje's and the likes of the Owen Farrells and the Vinopolas, and they went on that Lions tour last year, and they didn't really get an off-season, didn't really get a chance to get much holiday. It's been a long season for them, so they'll be really... at the end of their sort of fitness and mental sort of form going into this match.
We've been talking about playoffs over the last couple of weeks, and we have different player formats and different sports as well. There's been a bit of consternation about the way the Aviva Prem finishes. You know, you finish in the top four places and then you could finish fourth in the standings and be crowned the champions as well. So I suppose on the back of those sort of grumbles, we've seen the top two teams in that division make it through to the final game.
Absolutely. They are. To echo what Arch has just said there, they are the best two teams, and I'm not for that, the system. I know Robbie and I had this conversation off air, I think, maybe on air as well, about the IPL, the fact that it's meaningless, an awful lot of it, because then you get to the playoffs and then it gets, okay, the business end, but it almost renders what's going on before it that a little bit more meaningless. Similar to this, if you're allowing the team who, you know, a league season rewards consistency, rewards the best side, and the way that this Aviva Premiership is set up, and thankfully it's the top two teams, but if a team finishes fourth in the league, yeah, and it turns into a cup competition, you could have two very good weekends, three very good weekends, and win the championship, and I've never been a fan of that.
We can debate it, but then you look at the American sport system, NBA, we've talked about.
Does anyone care about the regular season until the playoffs? No.
But
does
do
you watch the baseball season until it gets to the playoffs?
Well, I do, yeah, but I'm an exception. But
madness.
But so you're not a favour of playoffs, you're a favour of just the league thing?
Absolutely. I'm old school in that regard. You play a 38-game season, you play a 50-game season. If you're at the top, at the end, what you're trying to do is you're trying to make it that little bit more interesting is what you're doing. And I think it's the sports that go down that route that need interest, essentially. You play a league season, if it's 38, 50, 100, the team at the end of that is top, they're the best. Give them the trophy.
Exeter against Surrey, some fascinating head-ups in this one, and more so than the midfield areas as well, where a number of England internationals go head-to-head in this final game of the Aviva Prem. And let's hear from one of that midfield division. Henry Slade has had an amazing season for the Exeter Chiefs, and of course we'll be looking to continue his good form in an England shirt in the summer.
Henry, a few days out from a third successive Premiership final, what's the mood in the camp?
Mood's really good. I think we're taking a lot of confidence from this season, how we've been going in recent weeks. We feel good. But obviously, when it comes down to it, it's just the final. Nothing previous matters come finals day. So, yeah, we know what's in the task in hand, and just really looking forward now to getting out on Saturday.
What have you learned from the past two finals?
I think the first one we sort of maybe let the occasion get to us first half and had a bit of a slow start. Obviously we brought it back a bit second half, but realistically probably gave ourselves a bit too much to do. I think the next season we sort of maybe at the start of it carried on a bit like that, started a bit slow. Sort of thought maybe because we got to the final last year we'll be alright this year, but realistically it's not like that. You've got to scrap for everything in this league. And we sat down together as a bunch of players and coaches and spoke about that and spoke about working hard for every moment in front of you and fighting for everything and then went on obviously a big unbeaten run last year and then ended up winning it. I think that change in mindset was a big shift for us. I think we've done well to continue that on this year, and obviously finishing the season top's really good. Getting home semi-final is really good, but obviously doesn't count for much now, so we've got to carry that on into the final, and the boys are looking forward to it.
As you say, it's knockout rugby. You had it last weekend. You strangled Newcastle to death in the end in terms of the performance. What do you have to do to beat Saracens?
Not that we have too much away, but
you know what's coming at you.
Yeah, when we're good, we're carrying really hard, and we're hitting really hard. I think it's all about, a large part of the game is mental, in terms of that sort of final 5% or 2-3-5%, whatever it is, in how hard you're hitting collisions, especially against Saracens, against some big lads. Winning the momentum battle and getting over the gain line and attack is going to be big for us. Obviously, our kicking game's got to be accurate and competing in the air. So, obviously, you've got to beat Saracens, they're a top side, you've got to be good in all areas. But we're just looking forward to getting out there and putting our best foot forward. Really.
As you said, you've worked really hard to get this. You don't want to let the season end on a damp squid, no?
No, exactly. It's a long season, like I say, a lot of hard work. To underperform in a final would be really disappointing. So yeah, we're really excited now. So that's the only way we're looking at it. Excited to get out there and cap off what has been a really exciting, really good season for us. Hopefully, we'll win.
I know you've talked about it many times, but you're playing with your mates as well, and this the whole crop of you have now come through. But we've got a new breed with the likes of Joe coming through as well. They've really stepped up this season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got a lot of young boys in the team. Obviously, we're not quite as young as we used to be now, but I'd say we're still fairly young. There's a load of us. We've been playing together for a long, long time now, so it is really nice to be playing with your mates, especially in occasions like this, like Premiership final. Playing with a load of your best mates is class.
And a lot of you are used to that big game atmosphere now. A lot more and more guys are stepping up onto the international platform as well. It's helping you all, isn't it, to develop as players?
Yeah, I think. But the way we're going week in week out here down at Sandy Park is encouraging that. And it's obviously we're playing well as a team, and individuals are shining off the back of that. And the recognition individuals are getting is great, and it's really pleasing to see more and more boys getting a look in internationally wise now. So, but the way they're doing it is by everyone here is working bloody hard in the training pitch and on a match day and a weekend just to play as well as we can, and rewards coming from the back of that.
Some players don't get to play in one final, let alone three or four, but yeah. Across the squad you had the Anglo-Welsh earlier in the season, that everyone has played their part this season.
Yeah, it's been a massive squad effort. Even boys that haven't played so much in the Prem have been massive drivers in training. We've had some, especially the last few weeks, had some really tasty training sessions, and it's nothing like that. Nothing prepares you better for a game at the weekend than having a real tough couple of days in the week. Sort of gets you right in the zone. So it's definitely been good for us, and it's been a whole squad effort.
Henry Slade there giving his thoughts ahead of the Aviva Premiership final, which of course we'll have more of in just a little while, because that was from getting off at 6 o'clock this evening. It is Exeter against Saracens. Promises to be a great match. It's on the big screen down here at Barasti if you fancy it. Who starts as favourite in that one, Mark Archer?
I think Saracens. I think based on their greater experience with their big name players there, we'll go into the match's favourites. I think they'll win. If the weather's good, they'll win comfortably by 7 to 10 points.
Opportunity for obviously Eddie Jones to see some of his stars in action, although he will have his eyes on his game tomorrow as England take on the Barbarians, first of their internationals ahead of their tour down to South Africa. I suppose this one does throw up a few opportunities to a few of the fringe players, and also gives Eddie Jones an opportunity to mix things up as well.
Yeah, Eddie Jones has named four uncapped players in that team tomorrow. Henry Trinder, inside centre, Jack Singleton, Elliot Stook, Zach Mercer as well in the forwards. And he's got the ability to change a few positions just to see where guys are at. So Elliot Daly, who often plays on the wing for England, is going to make a first start at fullback. So it's interesting to see what Eddie Jones is thinking is there. Mike Brown, who's the regular fullback, is actually on the wing. And then he's got the likes of George Ford, Chris Robshaw, both co-captaining the team. So good chance for him. Of course, big talking point there was Danny Cipriani. Not seen in an England jersey for many years now, but always had plenty of talent. But always a bit misguided at times in part of his career on and off the field. So he's been given an opportunity to go to South Africa. We know that Eddie Jones doesn't really tolerate fools, so it'd be good to see how Danny Cipriani is sort of put into that squad complex and how he sort of reacts, and a good chance for him to press some claims, really. It's some of the last chances players will get, really, to press a claim for that World Club squad, which is only a year away. So interesting to see. And then the Barbarians always bring a very free-flowing style of rugby. That they've got the likes of Chris Ashton playing on the wing, Scottish fly half Finn Russell. It's a starter backline. They run the ball from everywhere, the Barbarians do. Well coached by Pat Lamb, so it'll be interesting to see how they go against England, who want to play with a bit of structure, a bit of style, of course, about to head to South Africa and play a couple of test matches over there in the summer.
Joshua Tuasova and Semi Radradra also in that Barbar's team tomorrow. Also big back row as well, all-star back row if you like. Juan Martin Fernandez Lobe, one of the greats of Argentina, he will be captain in the side. He's in the back row along with Victor Vito of New Zealand and Justin Tipperich of British and Irish Lions. So that's a heavy old back row to be up against.
Yeah, some great name players. You know, Barbarians matches are always fun. I say they'll play with a certain amount of panache and style and free-flowing rugby, and then England can't get sucked into that kind of game plan. They need to play with some structure. They need to, you know, have a good set piece. And then what tends to happen is the Barbarians tend to run out of huff and puff in the second half, and England's structure and style tends to see them home. But it will be an interesting match. A lot of players, as you say, on the fringes, really trying to take the opportunity that Saracens and Exeter English players are away playing this match this afternoon. Gives them a chance to, you know, stake a claim and, you know, make a stake in the ground for Eddie Jones's squad before they head off to South Africa in the next couple of weeks.
We've got the Aviva Prem final playoff at 6 o'clock this evening. We've talked about Exeter and their big guns. What about Saracens? How have they got to where they are in this final game of the season?
Probably game-wise, I'd say the Clermont away game. We got beat by 40 the week before at home. It's quite a low point in our season so far. But the resilience we showed and the way that we came back, and particularly the way that we started the game and fought right to the end, I thought it really helped us on to kicking on from there and doing pretty well for the rest of the season.
Shields as well, of course. Now Cruz with the burst throw, and this is a toe, and the second row partners combining to surely now send Saracens to Twickenham.
I think first half against Wasps on the weekend, you know, big game, semi-final. We've been putting a lot of work into our game this year, and I think it's all paid off on the weekend.
A great example of that for me personally would be the Leicester game away, Christmas Eve game. We were obviously going through a bit of a tough patch, seven games that we've lost in a row, and we had a great performance. Even though we lost to Clermont, we had a great performance, and that sort of springboarded us into that Leicester game, especially playing away at Welford Road.
The pass out wide, and eventually in the corner goes Sean Maitland.
I think the Gloucester game, it started a bit slowly, but I felt like towards the game we were relentless and we went after them every play. Obviously we started a bit slow, but I think that was a good performance from us.
I suppose one that springs to mind quite recently is Nick Ezekwe made a brilliant cover tackle against Bath on Carl Fotolii. He got held in at a scrum. I'd gone the wrong way, and then he worked sort of over and above to get back. And it was nice for he's coming the team this year and sort of been ever improving, the lad who's come through the system and just getting better and better, and for him to sort of do that and really make a mark and define what we're all about. We talk about work rate all the time, the things that people don't see, but we all saw that one, you know, over and above effort and, you know, athletic wise a big guy, 6'6", however he is, getting back and making a brilliant cover tackle, give the team loads of energy. So I'd say that he's had a great year, and it was a nice moment for us and for him.
Exeter against Saris at 6 o'clock, Aviva Prem final, and then stick around, 3 hours later you've got Leinster against Scarlets as the Pro 14 comes to a conclusion.
Dublin, 12 months ago, Leinster Scarlets, the Pro 12 semi-final.
A proud day to be a Scarlet. 8 days later, we were back and champions.
This, for the Scarlets fans, is simply great to watch.
Us, we licked our wounds and came back stronger. Table toppers of the league, and we're flying in Europe.
Beaten in the pool of league leaders, victors over the holders Saracens in their quarter-final.
We were doing pretty well ourselves. We went further than we have in a decade. West was best until we met you.
This has been a very special semi-final performance. A joy to witness.
If you could have stopped us that day, a complete performance, Bilbao bound, and what a trip, a fourth star on our jersey.
Leicester are back in the summit of European rugby.
Before victory over our biggest foes, one more stop on our journey. When we needed it most, we hit our stride.
It's a fast trip, and it's made for the men in scarlet.
Now, back to Dublin. The double. Or the defence.
Double or the defence, that's the way it's been billed for this one, Leinster against Scarlets. Again, two of the strongest teams in that division, Archie, coming together.
Yeah, both teams, the Welsh team and the Irish team, packed with internationals, packed with experience, and also both splattered with some international big names in both squads as well. But you got to feel Leinster, who are the newly crowned European champions, four times they've won the Champions Cup, are probably favourites, given that the fact of the match, the game is in Dublin. It's not their home stadium, but the Aviva, at the Aviva, where so many of their players will be comfortable playing for Ireland and would have played matches there previously for Leinster, you've got to think that the players will be strong. But then again, you're taking on Scarlets, some big-name players in that lineup, the likes of Lee Halfpenny, Scott Williams, Gareth Davies, they
Mike
have
Phillips.
Ken Owens. They're packed with talent as well. So that and of course they're the defending champions. So it's the defending champions from last year's Pro 14. The Scarlets taking on the newly crowned European champions. You just got to think that the momentum is with the Irish team. They were so good in the Six Nations. They were so good winning the European Champions Cup a couple of weeks ago. You just think everything in the matches in Dublin, everything seems for me to favour Leinster in this final.
Well, one thing about the Leinster, and I've enjoyed watching them this season, certainly enjoyed watching them over in Europe and last weekend in the semi-final as well, is the internationals that they've brought in. Brig, who's the Australian flanker? Scott Vardy. Scott Vardy, yeah, who is the Australian.
Yep, Scott Vardy, he'll come off the bench today.
And then, obviously, the way that they seem to have come together for a Leinster legend, Issa Nakoa, who is bowing out, this is his final season for them. And they seem to be playing for him to a certain degree this season, Chris McCarthy.
Yeah, indeed. And we had Jamie Heaslip on, didn't we? Oh, what was that, 2 months or so ago? And he was talking about what Stuart Lancaster has done for that team, that his role behind the scenes cannot be, you know, underestimated. He's been a huge force. And, you know, Jamie Heaslip said that he's one of the best coaches he's ever worked with. He was very much in praise of what he's done, and you look at what they've done. I watched them in that final against Racing, and they are a very, very good team, and they've got Johnny Sexton. When you've got Johnny Sexton, who for me, and I know Mark Archer will disagree with this, he's definitely the best fly half in the Northern Hemisphere. You make a good argument to say he's the best in the world, and I know you boys have got Bowden Barrett to discuss with that one, but yeah, they for me will be the favourites, and I expect them to win by maybe even as much as 10 points today.
It's going to be an interesting one, and it is going to be the final. It seems to be every game is the final game for Issa Nasiwa. Every single time he turns out. He had his final game up at their home, but this will be his final game for Leinster in Ireland. So it's the final game, if you like, for a man who is regarded now as something of a Leinster legend. Why? Have a listen to this.
Isaac Kaya. We just stick with Issa. But we say it three times. Issa.
One of the greats of Leinster, probably the greatest ever to play for Leinster, I'd say.
He's unbelievable, isn't he?
Nuts and bolts player, he's the best I've ever played with.
Very good communicator, always talking, always yapping. Giving you that peace of mind, you know, 50, 60,000 people there, a bit of voice goes a long way.
You talk to him at half time in the changing room, and no matter what the scoreline was, whether you were ahead or whether you were behind, still with a pure calmness and clarity in what needed to be done.
Whenever the chips are down and stuff is going hard, you'll always see Issa come up with a big moment, big hit or big carry or just an intelligent play.
The things that stand out to me is just how selfless he is for the team. It doesn't matter who you're playing against, what physical state he's in. He always turns up mentally and gives everything he has.
Don't sound like I'm blowing the trumpet too much, but he's pretty much the perfect leader, you know.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.